Welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich.
And I'm Vera Sarzano.
And we would like to welcome you back to Season 6, Episode 14. Ciao Vera, tanto tempo!
Nathan, come sei lontano da me! Vieni qui!
Vera, it's been almost a week since we were in Tuscany with you. In fact, exactly a week. And first of all, it feels like we had been there for a very long time because we crammed so much in. We had so much fun. Really, it was just a weekend.
That's not even a vacation. It's just, you know, a coffee break.
But we had a lot of fun, didn't we?
Oh, that was the best time ever. Oh, yeah. And I got to see you in person again. And I got to meet Alessandro. All of our listeners are so jealous because I met Alessandro now. Can't wait to tell them everything about our weekend.
We have a very special episode that Vera and I have prepared for you that is only about our time in Tuscany because we felt like it kind of deserved its own episode, didn't we, Vera?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I feel like I understand Tuscany a little bit better than I did before. You can so easily get ideas of places in your mind, but you don't really, really understand them until you spend time there. And granted, this was a very short trip, but at least I understand Tuscany better. And I also think it's really, really special to be able to understand exactly what somebody is talking about when they reference going to the market or when they reference their downtown or a certain coffee shop, or we were driving on this one road. You remember that road, Nathan, that we were on together? You know, when you experience that, even the room that I'm looking at Vera's face right now, and then the background behind her in her new beautiful villa that she lives in, I now know exactly where that is in her home because I've seen it. And the same thing with her. She's been here in our city in Conegliano, so she knows exactly what room I'm sitting in recording this. I don't know, it just kind of makes it special, doesn't it, Vera?
It does. And in your living room, I was like, wow, this is the place. It was like being on a movie set or something. It was unbelievable. We broke the barrier, you know, and I was there on stage with you.
Yes, I feel like we broke the barrier as well, being in your house and seeing your space. And because I know you don't plan to move anytime soon from there. So I feel like we just have this deeper understanding about each other's lives, and it's really special, and I really appreciate it. And yes, everyone, I'm going to just officially say it. I officially love Tuscany now, okay?
Yay!
Are you happy, Vera? You win.
Very happy. I knew you would. I mean, what's not to love here?
It's beautiful. This is the one thing I want to share, and then we're going to get on with today's episode. But Vera told me something while we were at the castle where Vera used to work, which some of you may have seen some videos that I posted on Instagram about this beautiful place. I didn't even post that much, but you might have seen some of the beautiful views from this castle. This castle is also home to Italy's oldest winery, and it's where Vera used to work. It's absolutely gorgeous, and Vera gave us the behind-the-scenes special tour, which I just thought was incredible. We were looking out over this view, and do you remember what you told me, Vera, about the view?
Oh, this is like a Renaissance painting. Nothing has changed in the past several centuries. I mean, obviously something changed, but all the modern buildings and factories are sort of hidden closer to the villages. So from that castle, and basically from my home where I used to live before this, it was the same idea. You don't see anything that was built after the 1400s. This is a quote from the Baron himself, the owner of the castle. He says, this is a Renaissance painting. I don't care about the art I have in the castle. And we're talking about a real baron, a real nobleman, right? So he always says, I don't care about the art I have in the castle. And he has original art from the 1200s and so on. So like huge pieces of art because I have my own Renaissance painting right here, Tuscany.
Yeah. and we just sort of stood there. It was just Veta and I. Everybody else had already kind of left and were walking down, back down towards the cars. And I was just taking in this view. And I was just like, this is the same view from this castle that has been here for like 600 years. That's kind of incredible. Italy makes it very hard to renovate property here, but they make it nearly impossible to build something new.
Absolutely, especially in Tuscany and other rural areas. They really wanted to preserve the paesaggio. See how beautiful it sounds, the landscape, okay? It's very important. So you can only build if there was already something there. So even if it's ruined now, just ruins and some stones, but you cannot build unless there was something already centuries ago. And you have to use the same materials and same idea. And it has to be sort of hidden. Even swimming pools need to have a special shape or color or shade so that if you climb up on top of the main towers in Siena, you don't see those blue rectangles that are like an eyesore. In Italian, we say pugno in un occhio, like a fist, a punch in your eye.
Yeah, that's a good term. I completely understand that concept. I've always kind of understood it, but for some reason, when we were up there on that wall of the castle and looking out over that view, it kind of all made sense to me. And then I was like, well, of course. And also, this is why people come to Italy, especially Tuscany, but this is why people come to Italy and love it so much, because it still looks like Italy. It still looks like this country that is in all these paintings from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And I think that's what just makes Italy so charming. I hope Italy doesn't change. Viva l'Italia.
La vera Italia.
Veta, thanks again so much for sharing your beautiful region with us. And I can't wait to share with everybody more about what we did, shared, ate, experienced there with you. But today we are going to be talking with a really, really wonderful couple who moved to the region of Abruzzo. So today we're really focused on the region of Abruzzo, more than Tuscany. And you're going to really find this couple super interesting, I guarantee it. Sometimes when we do these interviews with different people that have moved to these regions, sometimes we talk a lot about the region, sometimes we talk just more about the person's story. In today's interview, Matthew and Sunny really talk about their region as well as their story. So I'm really excited for you to hear that. Before we get into today's interview, though, Veta and I are going to have our Italian conversation, right, Veta?
Yes, we are. And you are going to ask me something, right?
Yes. So Veta, in today's interview, I'm going to be talking with Matthew and Sunny about natural disasters. We kind of discussed that a little bit in the episode. And I'm wondering, have you ever experienced a natural disaster in Italy or in any other place in the world?
I have, actually. And well, first of all, I experienced a few earthquakes. And the strongest one was December 1999, over the New Year's holiday. And I was in Bormio, in Lombardy, skiing with friends. It was kind of late afternoon. It was dark already. So I was just in my hotel room waiting. It was an apartment. So I was in my room, and the bed and the beams start shaking. I mean, it was so scary because of the noise, basically, because there was all the snow came down and it was so scary. In like 30 seconds, we were all out of the building, and that was bad. And the worst part was that it was December 1999. We were all scared about the millennium bug. The world is going to end because our watches cannot go from 1999 to 2000. Oh, man. We were so naive, at least. It was like, turn off your computers, turn off your cameras, turn off everything you have. And what happens right there and then when all the news on the news and on the newspaper you read everywhere, turn everything off because, you know, we don't know what's happening with the change of the millennia? A earthquake, like a really bad one. And then I was in Florida during a hurricane, Wilma, 2005, and also a few more little earthquakes when I was in San Francisco. So I'm not very lucky, am I? What about you, Nathan? Have you ever experienced any natural disaster?
Well, first of all, I know this is a terrible thing to say, but how in the world did I grow up an hour from San Francisco and never in my life ever felt a earthquake in California ever? And then you're just visiting San Francisco and you feel an earthquake while you're just visiting? That's not even fair. Besides earthquakes, though, I think maybe the only natural disaster I've ever experienced in my life, and it wasn't even really that disastrous, was a friend of mine, Matthew, and I were doing this crazy road trip from New York all the way down to Mexico. And we were in Texas. I think it was just outside of Houston, Texas. We were at a hotel. By the way, we were pulling a boat on a trailer with us on this road trip across the United States and Mexico. And there was a flash flood while we were there. And the entire area outside was just immediately, without any warning, just completely covered in this flood. Fortunately, we were on the fourth floor of our hotel. We weren't really in any danger. And the water went away very quickly. But the boat that we were pulling filled with water and soaked everything that we were pulling in the boat. That wasn't so great. But anyway, yeah, no real danger from that. So yeah, I think I've been very fortunate, knock on wood, about natural disasters. Now, what about Tuscany, Veta? Are there any sort of natural disasters in Tuscany, or is it pretty much a non-natural disaster-prone region?
I say it's a pretty safe region. We feel some earthquakes, but they've always been minor ones. The big ones were in the neighboring regions like Umbria or even Abruzzo, but you could feel the earthquake here a little bit. So, no. Tuscany is safe.
Except for maybe some flooding occasionally.
Well, there's a river in Florence, the major one, the Arno. So obviously, if it rains a lot, you have a flooding. But that happens in every, city with a river. It's not just Tuscany.
One more point for Tuscany.
Mm-hmm. Tuscany.
The whole time that I was in Tuscany, every hour or two, Veta would do this thing with her hands where she, where you're like trying to hypnotize somebody and she would be like, Tuscany. She would say that to Alessandro and I. We would just laugh at her. Anyway, but yeah, I can see why Veta loves Tuscany so much. And of course, we'll talk more about that later. Okay, Veta, let's do the Italian translation.
Of course, we are talking about natural disasters and we have terremoto, which is earthquake. Mm-hmm. And we have uragano, hurricane. So that's pretty easy, right? And alluvione, that's the flood, okay? Then we have a word that you all need to learn, even if you don't study Italian or you don't want to learn the language, but this is very useful if you're coming to Italy, even, for a vacation, and it's pericolo. That's danger, okay? Pericolo. And then we have the word per fortuna. That's how we say luckily. Per fortuna. Two words. Per fortuna. So try to remember this because it's something we use a lot. Oh, per fortuna stai bene. Per fortuna sei arrivato. Per fortuna qui. Per fortuna là. So if you come to Italy, you will hear per fortuna a lot.
Okay. Well, here is the Italian version of our conversation. Vera. Nella nostra intervista di oggi con Matthew e Sunny, che vivono in Abruzzo, parliamo di disastri naturali. Hai mai vissuto un'esperienza di questo genere in Italia o in qualche altra parte del mondo?
Sì, ho sentito diversi terremoti qui in Italia, ma il più forte è stato il 31 dicembre 1999. Mentre ero a sciare a Bormio con gli amici e abbiamo avuto paura del famoso Millennium Bug. E poi ero in Florida durante l'uragano Wilma nel 2005 e poi anche a San Francisco. Mentre ero a San Francisco ho sentito tanti piccoli però, terremoti. Insomma, diciamo che non sono molto fortunata. E tu?
Eravamo in Texas e c'è stata un'inondazione improvvisa, ma Per fortuna eravamo al quarto piano dell'albergo e non eravamo in pericolo. Ci sono pericoli di questo genere in Toscana, dove vivi tu?
No, per fortuna no.
Va bene. Okay, well, Vera, let's get right into today's interview with Matthew and Sunny from Abruzzo. This is a couple that has a history with the military, but this particular interview is unlike any of the other ones where we've talked to military people because both Sunny and Matthew have been in the military, but they're also both retired and they are no longer in the military. So they're in Italy of their own choosing. And they're not here because they're here for military, which makes them kind of a unique case and a unique story. So I'm really excited for you to hear what they have to share today. So here is my interview with Sunny and Matthew from the region of Abruzzo. Welcome, Matthew and Sunny. So lovely to have you here.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thanks. It's great being here.
Can you tell us where you moved to Abruzzo from?
Okay. Yeah. Well, we moved to Abruzzo from Texas. We're not from Texas, but that's just where we lived last. So we moved here last February. Living in Italy, everybody is always asking you, where are you from? Where are you from? And we constantly get that question. And it's a normal, everyday question. No, we have zero problems with it. It's just one that's very difficult to answer because we were both in the military. So we're both retired military. And so basically after 18, we never went back to our home of record. For me, it was South Carolina. For Sunny,
it was Florida.
Florida. I knew that. I was just waiting for her to chime in.
She didn't.
And being in the military, you move around typically every 2 to 3 years. So I left South Carolina when I was 18. Moved around quite a bit, different states. I moved from there to North Dakota, to Japan, Japan to Germany, Germany to Naples, Italy for about a year and a half, and then to Pordenone, Italy, which is up north for about 3 years, and then to England, where we kind of met initially.
We didn't really meet in England, though.
Well, we didn't really meet in England.
We met in Iraq, but we don't want people to think that things happen in Iraq sometimes between people that meet there, and that did not happen.
Not with us, no.
So we tend to leave that piece out of the story.
Well, I don't know what that means. What do you mean things happen to people in Iraq? That's something that military people must know.
They probably do.
Yeah, it's generally what often... it's an isolating place and people strike up short-term emotional connections with other people and affairs take place. That was not the case with us. We met in Iraq, but we actually did not like each other at all. So
we're still working on that.
Yeah.
Interesting. But, okay. So you met in Iraq, didn't like each other, and then reconnected in England?
Yeah, because I was moving from Italy to England and she was already based in England. She was just temporarily in Iraq. So I would email her some questions about England because I hadn't been there before. And we ended up working together in a fairly small unit. Again, still for whatever reason, didn't like each other. We're both very introverted people and she's very introverted into herself. And I was kind of like the new guy. So that didn't go over well. So we've moved around quite a bit. From England, I went to Virginia, where I retired out. I retired from the military out of Virginia. But before I retired, she had eventually came through Virginia for a school. And then we just connected on Facebook, of all things. And I was like, wow, is she friend requesting me? This is so weird. I thought she hated my guts.
Hey, wait a minute, Sunny. Why did you send him a friend request?
Yeah, why?
That's a really great question, and I would love to answer it for you, but I can't. I really have no idea why. So you know how when you're on Facebook and you see these suggested friends? He was one of the suggested friends. And quite honestly, I'm a pretty nosy person. Like, I don't come across as nosy. But if I get access to your profile and you've got like 120 pictures from 10 years ago, you better believe I'm going through every single one of them. So I thought perhaps maybe I could just, you know, see what he's been up to, get a little dirt, kind of, you know, stick my nose around without, you know, chit-chatting. And so I friend requested him, and he like accepted like that. And then he sent me a message, and it pretty much said like, oh, wow, thanks for friend requesting me. I was under the impression you didn't like me. And so I just kind of explained, you know, my state of mind when we were in England together and why maybe I came across the way that I did. And come to find out, he had been married previously. Him and his wife went through divorce. So I was like, oh, where are you at now? And he said he was in Virginia. And I said, oh, funny, I'm getting ready to go to Afghanistan. I have to come to Virginia for some training. You know, we should maybe have lunch or something. And he was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then history was written right there.
So from Virginia, I retired out of Virginia, and then she got orders to Texas. So we're like, cool, let's go check out Texas. So we lived in Texas for about what, seven years.
Yeah.
But we had always talked about moving back overseas, experiencing different cultures. I always loved Italy, you know, because I lived here for a little while before. My daughter was born here, but we actually didn't settle on Italy at first, did we?
No, I mean, we kind of did, but then we changed our mind.
We thought it would be extremely difficult to move to Italy, and it turns out it's not that difficult. There's some hurdles you got to jump over, but...
The driver's license is a bit of a put-off for us, but...
Yeah. I know you have a lot of Brits and some other people from the EU. They got it kind of easy, right? Mm-hmm. So they're able to get their driver's license, whereas Nathan and I and Sonny, we have to go through this whole process to... And I'm not trying to complain. It's just that if you've been driving for 30 plus years, sometimes like it can be kind of frustrating because you end up going to a school, a driving school, and it's like you're 17 again. You're sitting in a class with kids, basically. The test is all in Italian, which is fine, but it's not the easiest of tests. And then, you know, so anyway, that was one downside. But after we kind of mentally went, okay, we can handle that, we started looking into actually moving here and which visas we needed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You can't come here and expect things to happen quickly. So for like the permesso di soggiorno, the residency, we knew all that was going to take a bit.
I think the military kind of sets you up for some of that as well. Yeah. It's in the military, we have a phrase, a hurry up and wait. You know, everything just takes a bit of time. There's a lot of hoops that you have to jump through. Everybody needs to have their hand in the pot with whatever you're doing in the military. So I think we were kind of just prepared. So all of the bureaucracy, we really haven't, I don't think, have had that hard of a time in reference to that. But
yeah, it's been pretty smooth.
I think it's been pretty smooth based on, you know, other people's stories. But the driving license is our biggest hurdle.
We have a year from the date of our residency. If I understand the law correctly, I'm sure a cop, if he pulls me over, will explain it differently. But we have a year from the date of our residency to basically have our Italian driver's permit. So we're good for our international driver's permit for now, hopefully. So that's kind of what we're doing. But the beauty of where we live is we don't really have to drive anywhere. We have a car, but we have 4 supermarkets, all kinds of cafes, some restaurants. You know, you have all these fruit and vegetable stands. It's kind of like small town living. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
You know,
it is nice. We drive like maybe once a week, twice a week at most.
Yeah.
If it's a really busy week, but most often we don't drive that unless we want to go to like IKEA or down to Pescara, which is our big town here.
What did each of you do in the military?
Same exact thing.
Same exact thing. Okay. Yeah. We started out in different jobs. And then partway through our career, we changed jobs and we eventually did the same thing. So he started out as a security police and then he became, I'm going to say it, it's not going to sound very cool, but it actually is pretty cool. He became a driver where he would drive very high ranking military officials around. And that's what he did in Naples, as he worked for an organization there where he drove a very high ranking military official. And then he became, it's called Office of Special Investigations. If you've seen the show NCIS, it's like that for the Air Force. The show is very glorified. It's nothing like that. But that's ultimately what we both did in the Air Force. And that's how we came across each other in Iraq, is I was there with the Army. He was there with the Air Force. But because we were going to be stationed in the same place in England. We had the same job, and he started asking questions. Yeah.
Right. So it's like FBI, but for the Air Force. Yeah.
My first time in Italy was when we came house hunting last year.
Is that right?
Yeah. I already said I'd been in Afghanistan and Iraq. We were stationed in England together. I've been to Japan. But I've never lived in Italy, never even got the opportunity to visit Italy while I was in England. So when we decided, if I'm being honest, I think I kind of manipulated him a little bit. Like,
Sonny, right now.
I really wanted to move. I felt like where we were at was nice, but like, I felt like we were stuck in a rut. Like, we didn't have a lot of excitement in our life. We were working to pay our bills and that was it. Like, really nothing left over, no fun. I mean, we're fairly young. Our kids are grown. Like, we should be like living life, right? And we were just totally not doing that. So I came to him one day. I was like, let's move to Italy, knowing that he loves Italy. So I said, let's move to Italy. He's like, are you serious? And I said, yeah. And he's like, yeah, okay, let's do it. So then we started looking, and then we were like, well, maybe Italy's not. So I've got him on board to move overseas, right? So then we're like, maybe Italy's not the place. But then we eventually came back to Italy. So we sold everything. We sold our house. We put our like a small selection of items in storage, but we basically sold it all. And we got on a plane the next day after we closed on our house and came here to do house hunting. So we were like all in. And that was my first time to Italy.
And we only gave ourselves two weeks to find not only what house we're going to purchase, but what village we're going to live in. So we narrowed it down. I know people come here like, you know, 15 times to Italy to do house hunting and stuff like that. But we were really kind of like all in at that point.
Yeah.
Well, I guess homeless.
Yeah.
Senza tetto.
Yeah.
But we didn't know kind of where we knew that we wanted to live in Abruzzo, because a lot of people don't know about Abruzzo, but it's very beautiful. There's lots of national parks, greenery, mountains. I mean, it's just gorgeous.
Growing up in Florida, I'm a beach gal, and he prefers the mountains. Like, so the mountains. It's like the perfect location to have access to both.
Yeah. So we went basically, before we came here, I had made a list of, you know, certain towns with like how many restaurants there are, how far is it from the hospital? How many cafes are there? What's the population like? So we did all this research, narrowed it down to like maybe 7 or 8 villages. And then we came here, hit the ground running, rented a car, and just started going to each one of these towns to see if it fit our, I guess, dream of living in Italy.
Some of them we had to go to a couple of times to say, I'm not 100% sure. And some of them, the second we drove into the town, we were like, no, that's not for us.
Yeah.
Some
of them can be a little, these medieval borgos or villages that are on these hilltops are very quaint and beautiful. Some of them can be very small, and you don't want to, for us, I don't want to live somewhere where you just kind of feel kind of isolated with little public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
But the place we chose, I think, has everything we need.
Yeah. So we also knew that one of the things that we knew that we would need when we came here was community as well. So we know that we wanted a place that had a robust enough population that we could create or, you know, be a part of a community here. But we also didn't want to live in a place that had too large of a population where you can't create that community, because there's just everybody's hustling and bustling.
Yeah. We like visiting Florence, but we wouldn't want to live there necessarily. I mean, it is gorgeous, but you know, just,
I don't know. Feel that way about Pescara too.
Yeah. Pescara, it's not even that big, but every time we go there, like, oh man, we can't wait to
I can't leave. Risk to meet cars. I left Florida when I was 18, but we moved around a lot. Like, I grew up in a very poor family, and so we moved pretty frequently. As a kid, like, I lived in many places in Florida. I lived in Iowa. I lived in Illinois. It's just part of me at this point is to just kind of get up and move. We pick up and move. And in the military, I mean, it really prepares you for that, because you get orders to a new location that you know absolutely nothing about. And you kind of walk into this place blindly with as much optimism as you can muster and just make the most out of it. And so I figured, like, I mean, people are doing this. It can't be that bad, right? And I trust him with my life. And he says, it's a beautiful location. And I said, oh, great, let's go.
Yeah. And I was listening to your podcast. I knew that you liked it. So I was like, oh, Nathan likes it. He's still here.
Great, yeah.
Must be good.
I think it's really wise the way that you thought through. We don't want a massive city where it's so hard to get a community, but also a tiny community where it's maybe so closed that we don't trust newcomers, but like a nice medium size kind mm-hmm. of smaller medium size towns or city.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that pretty much nails it down. And yeah. I think we have, I mean, we've only been here 10 months, but I really feel like we've created that community that we're looking for in the other people that we've met here.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And that's kind of why we chose Abruzzo as well, because we knew, or at least we thought, there wasn't a lot of foreigners here or English speakers, but it turns out there is quite a bit. But, you know, that's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. You know, they become great friends and a great resource as well.
Yeah, we've got other American friends. We've got a lot of British friends, a couple people from some other countries. We, you know, some Italian friends as well.
Yep, some Australians just bought a place down the street.
It's very much a melting pot here.
Yeah.
But you do very much need to learn the language in a way. So, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
For sure. Do you get a lot of people speaking the native dialect?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the older generation typically speak Abruzzese, and even, you know, these different villages have their own version. Like where we live in Penne, there's Pennese, and then 10 kilometers down the street is another village called Loreto Abruzzino. They have their own dialect, and apparently when each people speak from Loreto and Penne, they can't understand each other. And I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, that just, you know, that close, but it's completely different. I guess if you think about hundreds of years ago, everything was a lot more isolated.
Your place in Texas that you sold was a lovely craftsman style home.
That was the hardest part about leaving Texas. We had no problem with leaving Texas, but that was the hardest part of leaving Texas.
Oh, we love that house.
Was the house. Yeah. Just because we got that house as it was being restored by a lovely couple that was doing the restoration. Got to continue on and
the house doesn't
pursue dreams,
home.
Right? Oh, yeah. Wow, that's beautiful. Did you come up with that?
I did. See that at Michael's? I feel like it should be on a Hallmark card.
Texas seems to be the new frontier for so many people. In the 7 or so years that you lived in Texas, how much did you see Texas change?
Especially where we lived. So we lived in Fort Worth, and it was just an astronomical influx in the population, but also a massive increase in the cost of living with that influx of population as well.
Yeah, I mean, constantly building, it just, the city kept growing and growing and growing. And even in the inner city, it was, you know, these big square condominiums popping up to, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. accommodate the, I guess, more people moving in.
Yeah. And Fort Worth is, you know, a stone's throw from Dallas. And so Dallas continued to grow in the same way that Fort Worth did. And while Fort Worth is expensive to live in, Dallas is even more expensive. So a lot of people would live in the Fort Worth area and commute to Dallas. It was just, it was a very, very big change.
Tell me about what happened when you land in Italy and you know you're going to these handful of villages to shop for property.
It was interesting because, I mean, having never been to Italy before, I mean, I've been to other countries, but, you know, I think if you come to Italy and you think everything is going to look like the States as far as building goes, the highway systems, you know, things like that. I think that you're in for a bit of shock, but I think if you come here with an open mind, then you're like, oh yeah, let's do this. But it was pretty exciting. It was very interesting for me because we flew into Rome and we did stay in Rome for a couple of days and we did kind of the touristy thing. And it was funny. We kind of joke about this. When we got to Rome, because you hear like, oh, things in Europe are cheaper, right? So we get to Rome and I'm like, no, I mean, we're paying €13 for a plate of spaghetti. That's not bad because in the States, we would pay this for this meal. And then we get to Abruzzo and you're paying like €6 for a plate of spaghetti. And then now when we leave Abruzzo, we're like, can you believe we just paid €3 for a coffee? But it was a great experience. I mean, it was great to see the different areas. It was definitely amazing for me to be outside the touristy locations. I don't do well with lots of people. So I was very ready to be out of Rome. And so coming to Abruzzo and getting to kind of go to those different locations was great. Our first place that we stayed was Città Sant'Angelo, which is beautiful. And I remember we get there and we get out of the car, we get in our Airbnb, and then we go for a walk, and you're on this hill and you just see the rolling countrysides and the Adriatic. And Matthew was standing there and he goes, "Oh my God, I just got chills." And you look down, he's got like goosebumps all over his arms. It's just beautiful. And it was, I can't say like, oh, it was a culture shock, but it was just nice to be in a new location, I think.
With Texas, we just kind of ran out of things to do because there just isn't a lot, especially for outdoors. You got to drive 8 hours sometimes if you want to go to like national parks and stuff like that. So coming here, it was like a little breath of fresh air because there is a lot of national parks. And if you want to go mountain biking, or we like to go snowboarding, Oro Corazo is a nice resort and it's not too far from here. And then there's another one about 45 minutes from here.
Paso Lanciano.
So we're going to do that this winter and try and be more active versus a kind of like a sedentary, just go out to eat type lifestyle.
DoorDash.
sometimes we do miss DoorDash, but yeah, we live in a historic center. It has that small town feel again, without being too small, and it's not too big. It's which is Three Bears, right? It's just like just right, spelled like penne pasta, but this isn't where penne came from. Okay. For your listeners, they call it kind of like the mini Siena. It's a city of bricks because everything here is made of bricks. The roads, brick, all the houses are pretty much exposed brick. So there's lots of brick that lends to a lot of charm. Just the architecture. The town itself is built on four separate hills that are kind of all connected. You definitely stay in shape because there's lots of climbing. Yeah. We go grocery shopping and we just pull like this little hand cart with us and we have to tug it up this pretty steep hill to get to our house. But, you know, it keeps us active.
Get your steps in for the day.
Yeah. So it's just very characteristic. I mean, we have beautiful views as well of the Maela and the Gran Sasso, which is like one of the bigger mountain ranges in southern Italy, with also views of the Adriatic Sea, really cute, quaint bars and cafes. Mm-hmm. You know, you just get a feeling about a place. And I think right away we knew this might be the place for us.
It's just something about it. Like we talk about it with some of our expat friends here and it's like, there's just something about Penne. Are there towns that are prettier? Sure. Are there towns that are cleaner? Sure. But there's just something about Penne when you're here. It just kind of is like, oh, it is cute. Like we've had house sitters and we've taken a few trips since we've been here and we've had house sitters come and watch our pets. And they say the same thing. Like we had one house sitter that was like, they were like looking at houses when they were here. They were like considering moving here because there is just something about Penne. And I think it's a mix of the views. I think it's a mix of the local people. And I think it's a mix of the expats that are here. Everybody on the whole is very welcoming. It's a very charming town. So it was just, we looked at one place after this, but when we walked into Penne, I was like, oh, I really like this place.
Yeah. The saying for the people of Abruzzo is that they're kind and strong. And we find that to be very, very true. You know, the nicest people and very welcoming. So that's been great.
How far is the nearest train station? Or do you have one in your village?
There was one that stopped in 1963, unfortunately. But if you want to, what people do is they take the bus because there's a decent transit very regularly from a bus station. So you can pick the bus from here to Pescara. And then jump on a train. So like when we went to Florence, that's what we did. We just hopped on the bus and then went to Pescara, grabbed the train, and then went straight to Florence.
Are you at all concerned about the earthquake situation?
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. I was thinking about that last night. I don't know why, but...
I think of it, for me, I'm not, because we don't live in the section of Abruzzo that typically got really hit hard the last time they had a major earthquake here. You kind of think of it like, you know, living in the States, somebody in Oklahoma is probably not, you know, living in Tornado Alley, probably doesn't think about tornadoes every day. Or like in Florida, I mean, the number of hurricanes that you have in a year, obviously things have changed.
Coming.
Yeah. But hurricanes, right? When I moved in, when I joined the military, a lot of people were like, oh, aren't you afraid of hurricanes in Florida? And it's like, well, you know, I mean, it's not an everyday occurrence, so not really. Or like, you know, in your case in California, you've got, you know, earthquakes and wildfires there as well. So it's, you know, you can't live your life day by day in fear of what could potentially happen. But here in Penne, or in this, you know, in the Pescara region of Abruzzo, like.
There was some damage back in, 2009.
2017 was the last
16, 17
was the last big one.
But nothing devastating like they had in L'Aquila. L'Aquila got hit really hard. Mm-hmm. That was very terrible to see on the news. Mm-hmm. And they're still to this day recovering. They're doing some construction here in town that they've finally got the funding. You know, the governments can work a little slow here, so they're finally starting to rebuild some of the structures to make them stronger again. Mm-hmm. But no, we don't. I don't think about it too much. I just happened to think about it yesterday, but it's not at the forefront of our mind. My plan is to grab the three dogs we have and run out the house, and then hopefully Sunny makes it out.
What about the cats?
Oh yeah, and the cats, right?
I don't know. They're hard to wrangle. It might just be me coming out.
Yeah, that's why I grabbed the dog. Yeah, but no, that's a valid concern because people, you know, it's like the people that live. Right now, if you live in Pozzuoli in Naples, kind of like where I used to live, they're dealing with the thought of, oh, wow, is this volcano that's supposed to be potentially bigger than Vesuvius, is that going to erupt? And, you know, that would just be devastation. So, but I think they're all kind of carrying on and living their lives, you know, as best as they can.
Okay, you have now gone through a summer there.
I was just about to mention that.
Yeah. You've gone through a summer. I've got two questions about that. What was the temperature like during the summer? And have you found your beach, like your go-to beach?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we found our go-to beach. We've been to a couple of them. Some friends took us to a little bit more of an isolated beach that's ran by an older couple, and they have like a nice little seafood restaurant on site.
And it's a secret, so we can't tell anybody.
Yeah, so we can't say the name. Yeah. But you go there, it's really nice, and you know, you lay on the beach in the morning, and then you head up and you have, you know, a nice seafood lunch, and then you go home and take a nap if you want to. But I think that's our favorite beach that we've been to so far. Oddly enough, so here in Penne, I think July and August were the worst months as far as heat goes. There were a small handful of days where we went over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Aside from that, I would say there was most of the time it was in the 90s or higher, but it was very, very hot here. We decided to take a vacation for the last 2 weeks of July.
Brilliant. Yes.
Brilliant idea. Well, I mean, there's a story behind it, but we went to Sicily for 2 weeks at the end of July, and it was absolutely roasting in Sicily. It would get, and we knew it would be hot, but it would get to 100 degrees by like 10, 11 in the morning. We would see people, do you remember in Siracusa, the guy sitting outside his house on a chair at night with the door open so he could watch TV in the house because it was too hot in the house. So he's sitting on the sidewalk outside watching his television. Yeah, it was very, very hot in Sicily. So I think any further south or any lower elevation, we definitely would have had a lot higher temperatures. We did get AC installed after the summer because we had no AC, but we're prepared for next summer. The most uncomfortable part, because these old houses do kind of help keep things cold pretty well, I would say it reached like 83, 84 degrees inside with everything closed and some fans running. It was bearable. Sleeping at night was the absolute worst because you have to sleep with your windows open. We have screens, but here they have these teeny tiny itty bitty like gnats or mosquitoes or something that come through the screen. And you just wake up and you're just covered in bites and they itch. And yeah, sleeping was probably the hardest part of the summer.
Really not selling Abruzzo.
I know. Right, everybody, no, oh, that's a good thing. Nobody come here. It's hot. It's horrible. There's bugs. It's disgusting. You don't want to be here.
Yeah. Snakes everywhere.
Yeah, there's bears. Snakes, bears. Oh. Yeah, you don't want to come. Mm-mm.
Help me out, Matthew. She's saying 100 degrees Fahrenheit. We know what that means as Americans, of course, but. We're talking about it in like the 40s, right? The low 40s.
Yeah, high 30s, low 40s. And it wasn't, looking at the our weather apps, it wasn't that different here in Penne from, you know, where we were in Sicily, maybe just a couple degrees. And talking to people here, they kind of struggled a little bit with the heat. But yeah, it's a small price to pay, I guess.
Yeah. And it was just the 2 months. That was it.
We did look. We thought about moving up north. We looked at Piemonte. And the only thing that kind of kept us from going there, and I don't know, you could probably talk to this more than me, but the air quality wasn't the best. Some say it's like the worst in Europe because everything is kind of settled between this mountain, the Alps. So it's kind of like a low-lying area where we were looking. So air quality is pretty important for us. And here it's not that bad. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Is Italy your retirement, the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years of your life plan? I mean, is Italy what you're planning on for the rest of your life? Or is this like, we'll be here for 5 or 10 years and see what happens? What's on your mind as far as that goes right now?
I'll answer it and say, I don't know. That's for me. I just honestly, I don't know. I would love for that to be the case, but it's a really tough one to answer because, a lot of people do come here to retire. But then we also see people moving back, after they reach a certain age, they move back to England or their home country. So we don't know if that's going to happen to us for whatever reason. But all I know, speaking for myself, is I'm just enjoying it kind of like day by day, week by week, month by month, and hopefully year by year, and kind of see where it takes us.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of how I feel right now as well. Our kids are, while they're grown, they're still fairly young. Check back in with me when we have grandkids, if we get to have grandchildren. I mean, could that change our minds? Could we decide to move back, to be closer to our grandkids? Possibly. I don't have a desire to move right now, which is new for me. When I get to a place, usually within a few months, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go. Let's go somewhere
and,
new.
And you don't know how relieving that is for me to hear, especially since she put all that trust in me to move to Italy. So I'm glad because I kind of told her, I was like, I'll give you a year and then I bet you'll want to move back to the States.
Yeah.
And so far so good.
Yeah, so far so good. I think it really lends to the whole community aspect, is that we knew that it was going to be important coming here, and we worked to create that that community. And yeah, I think that because I told him that before we came here, I said that's going to make or break it for me. Like, I need to have a community to depend on, friends to hang out with. Otherwise we're just going to sit in our house and rot, or we're going to, walk around and think, oh, look at those people at that cafe. I wish we could go, have friends like that sort of thing, which is exactly what we did in Fort Worth. We've made more friends in the 10 months that we've been here in Penne than we did in the 7 years that we lived in Fort Worth. And I would even venture to say that the friends that we've made since we've been here are far more genuine than the friends that we've made in Fort Worth.
And Sunny has organized a language exchange here in town. So,
I took it over.
You took it over. But basically, once a week, we get together with some Italians and English speakers, and we just exchange. We do like 15 minutes in Italian, 15 in English, and so forth. And next week, we're hosting a one in our house where some Italians are going to teach us some local card games. Mm-hmm. And what was the other one? Tombola?
Tombola and Bestia.
Tombola and Bestia. So they're going to teach us how to play that. So it's kind of cool.
That's amazing what you just said, though. 7 years in Fort Worth, and you're in 10 months, you're further ahead and more connected there than you were in 7 years in your native country speaking your native language.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Strange.
I really think we know what that's like, but any of your listeners that are also in the military are going to be able to empathize with this as well, is that when you are put in a new location, you kind of latch onto those things that you have in common, right? In the US, what do you really have in common with people? I mean, you have to have like, you can find a work, your work buddies, or you have to, have a hobby outside the house that you have in common. Whereas here, the expats tend to like, oh, there's new people in town. Let's chit chat with them. Let's see if we like them. If we like them, let's bring them into the fold and introduce them to other people, sort of thing. So I think that we already had that thing in common, is that you're in this kind of, fishbowl as an expat, and everybody's looking at you as the new people. And so it's very much like that in the military, right? When you're stationed overseas, you very quickly make friends and new families there with the other people that you live with, because you're all going through the exact same thing. Whereas here, all of us expats are going through the exact same thing.
And the Italians as well. Like Italian, usually they don't associate their friends with work.
Mm-hmm.
They don't latch on to titles as much as maybe we would in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So if they meet somebody from a friend, then the next thing you know, you're their friend and you're automatically kind of included. So that's kind of nice as well. They're very welcoming to foreigners, I think.
I don't think one Italian has asked us what we did for work.
No, not really.
Expats do, but yeah. The Italians have not asked us sometimes, what we did for work.
Sometimes they might, but it's not their primary right. question. Usually it's, why in the world would you want to live in Penne?
Yeah. Why Penne?
Because they can't see it. They've been here their entire lives. So,
but in the States, that's like normal. Oh, I'm so-and-so. Nice to meet you. Oh, what do you do for work? That's like one of the first like three or four questions that come out of people's mouths when you first meet somebody in the States. Whereas here, it's just kind of flopped.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've made a really good job of identifying with what we do versus who we are as people.
How many kids are there between the two of you, and where are your kids right now in the United States?
We have 17 kids.
No.
We have three. Matthew brought a wonderful daughter to the relationship, and I brought a couple of boys. So we have three kids in total. Our daughter is currently in Tennessee, but could potentially move. And my boys were in two different locations, but now they are both living together in Arizona, which is nice, but still separated. So, if we were to move, where do you move? They kind of live in different locations, you know?
True.
So you have some time. Nobody's having kids until they're in their 30s these days. So you've got time.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you move your pets with you, right?
We move three dogs.
Okay. So could you tell us about moving your pets overseas with you? Because I think that's always an interesting story to hear how that worked out for different people. And I'm curious to hear how it worked out for the two of you. And then how much stuff from your life did you ship over mm-hmm. here with you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The Facebook groups actually really helped us with navigating how to get the dogs here. It was a lot. Well, I mean, obviously there's some stressors involved in it. But if you just follow the information that's given, you're going to get them here. No problem. We brought three with us. We put one under the plane and we had two. Two were small enough to be excess baggage that we took on the plane. We chose our airline based on recommendations from other people. We flew Lufthansa, and that was a really great choice. They were amazing. With the dogs, and the dogs did a lot better than we thought they would. But if you just, obviously it's a little bit stressful because you do have some time constraints on some of the things that you do. Like you can't start the paperwork to import your animals until 10 days prior, and you're trying to get your visa and you're trying to get your bags packed. And, you know, having that in the mix with everything else you're doing can be a little bit stressful, but the process itself was fairly easy, but the Facebook groups that we're in were instrumental in that.
I would say that the number one advice I would give anybody wanting in the future to move their pets to Italy or Europe would be on their immunization records, their vaccination records for rabies,
mm-hmm.
make sure that the vet is putting the chip, their chip number, their 14-digit chip number on that same document. We, unfortunately, you know, having been moved around different states, we had to go back to different, you know, like Virginia, find this vet that put the chip in and also got the shots to, hey, could you please add this number to this old shot record? That was the most stressful part for us, was just trying to accumulate all that information from different vets. So if you have that, I think that'll make things a lot easier because that's one of the USDA requirements, is to have the microchip number on the actual vaccination records.
Good tip.
And as far as moving stuff over, we actually just had this conversation with it yesterday. We were talking with somebody about this. This is where the Facebook groups failed us. And I'll put them on blast. And
this is very subjective.
Yeah, it is very subjective. I wanted to bring like a half of a container. I wanted to fill a half a container with some curated boxes. I'm very particular about like my mattress. And so I wanted to bring our mattresses with us. I wanted to bring our mattresses and just, you know, some of our things. Kind of at the last minute where we had to make that decision, we actually had a shipper booked and then we ended up saying, no, that's okay. And we just shipped, I think, 11 boxes. That's one regret that I do have. I very much wish we had gone ahead with and moved the container here. There were things that didn't make it that I wish we had here. I absolutely wish we had our mattress here. I think the furniture here is one thing I think Italians definitely do wrong.
Well, I wouldn't say they do it wrong. It's just different. So
that's wrong for me. He's trying to be nice.
I like the style of Italian and European furniture. I get it. I don't like the old clunky American kind of like oak armrests and stuff like that. But I do agree that the mattresses in the States are far superior.
Yes. It's just here, it's not about comfort, right? And we had this conversation the other day. I said, you know, nobody puts their feet up. You know, the nonas just sit in their hard chairs in the kitchen. Like, comfort is not like top priority. So like the couches are stiff, everything is super modern, very low profile. So, you know, if you've got some aches and pains like we do after 20 years in the military, getting up from low modern furniture can be a bit slow for us. And all the mattresses are just horrendous. And we paid a lot of money for our mattress and we shopped around for a long time for it. But we know when we travel, it's just going to be horrendous sleep. Like, it's just not top priority for them. So for me, if you're very, very picky about comfortable couches and comfortable bed, meaning comfort for me is like plush, like you sit on it and you sink into it, or you lay in your bed and you're like, ah, oh, and your mattress just envelops you.
You can tell she likes her mattress.
Yes. Then you probably want to bring your things. But if you're like into super stiff, hard things, if you like a good firm mattress, you're going to be fine here.
Yeah. I mean, but at the end of the day, we can't have that mattress for like 15 years.
That's fairly new though. But then you ship over another one. But yeah, I mean, that's one regret that we do have, is I do wish that we had shipped some of the things.
My thought process was, if we're going to pay maybe like $7,500 to have half a container shipped, why don't we just use that $7,500 or less, probably a lot less, to purchase what we need once we get there. So
we didn't spend less.
We didn't spend less. You know, having to furnish an entire house and everything like that. Because we came here, you know, we did send 11 boxes through Send My Bag, not to give them a plug, but we did that. And then we showed up with a couple suitcases and that was it.
Yeah. I mean, what we sent was mostly clothing, some of your tools, some books for me. And I think one box of some kitchen items, but I wish we had sent more. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause especially kitchen stuff. And we were talking about this yesterday, you can find quality kitchen items, but it's pretty expensive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas you can get pretty quality kitchen items in the States for a reasonable amount of money. You can find the same things here. It's just one of the few things that actually cost quite a bit more, I think.
Yeah.
So I, you know, hindsight's 2020, but I wish we had shipped the container.
Okay. So in 2022, you were going to spend $7,500 for half of a container. I'm curious, you sent 11 boxes. Would you be willing to tell us approximately how much did it cost us to ship those 11 boxes?
$2,200.
Okay, so there's a good chunk of it. That's almost like a third of that original amount.
Yeah.
And you spent another more $5,000 or $6,000 to purchase all the other items you think that you would have shipped over?
Yeah, I think it then some. You think about, you know, two beds, two, you know, wardrobes for each room.
Our mattress, we have an American king size, or what, you know, it's a few centimeters off, but their version of a king size mattress, we paid $3,000 for that. So it was very expensive for that mattress. Yeah. But that was like the softest one that we can find, and it's still not that amazing. But then you add, you know, wardrobes on top of that because they don't do closets here, and you've got couch and dining table and, you know, outdoor furniture because we have a terrace. And we definitely, I mean, some of that we would have had to have bought anyway because we weren't sending all of those things, but we definitely spent more than the $7,500 for the half container.
Yeah. Well, some people are lucky. They come here and they actually purchase a house that already has nice furniture in it, or they rent, you know, a furnished place. And that's a really good economical way to go, I think.
Mm-hmm. Where did you end up getting your mattress?
Ooh. Oh, it's like it's not a chain. I don't think it was like a boutique place in a town called Chieti. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember the name of the place.
He kept pulling out mattresses because he kept telling him we wanted, you know, a soft mattress, and I would lay on it and I was like, no, it's not soft enough. And he kept pulling out mattresses, and then he's like, ah, and then he's like, wait a minute. And then he goes and he pulls out this other mattress, and it said on it, soft. Just said soft. So I laid on it and I was like, he's like, that's the softest we have in the store. And I was like, well, it's going to have to do because we've been to like 7 places and this is the softest mattress I've laid on.
Mm-hmm. We sound like some spoiled brats right now, don't we? I want to soft this and soft that, but you know, you got to be comfortable, I guess. Yeah. And sleep for longevity is important. There you go.
I know what you mean, Matthew. I mean, yes, when you come to a new country, there are going to be those things that you're so used to that you just like have to adjust to. Trust me, when Italians move to the United States, they have a very long list of complaints about the American lifestyle. So I think you're in a pretty safe zone. You're not, okay. I don't hear a lot of complaints. This one little topic to be kind of picky about, I don't think is quite so bad. Both of you, I just want to say you've done a very good job of selling Abruzzo while keeping the name of your beach private so that you're not going to have a whole bunch of people flocking to your beach. I completely don't blame you for that. I know a number of people that live in that region that have moved there, and they kind of are all saying the same thing, which I think is really, really a testament to the fact that you didn't just immediately say, okay, well, you know, we're moving to Italy, so I guess it has to be Tuscany.
Mm. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, to be honest, we probably couldn't afford Tuscany. We're on a fixed income, right? So it's the cost of living south of Tuscany is really good, mm-hmm. I think, anyway. So that was another factor that we considered.
I'm so happy to hear that you've had the experience that you've had. I love your motto of, we'll just see what happens. We don't have to know where we're going to be in 10 years, but we're going to just love where we are right now. I think you're ahead of everybody else listening to this that's not lived in the military, both of you. Mm-hmm. I think it's so great that it's not like one of you is a military person and the other one isn't, because you guys really, really understand each other and you understand the idea of living in a new place. Well, thanks again so much for your time, both of you. I really appreciate this. This has been really fun getting to know both of you, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having us. It's been an absolute blast. So thanks.
Talk soon. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.
Vera, have you ever heard of that city where Matthew and Sonny live, in the city of Penne in Abruzzo?
No, I have not.
Well, like they said in their interview, it's not where the pasta came from. The penne pasta didn't come from there, but it sounds like a really fantastic place, doesn't it?
It does. And you know what? Abruzzo is the next region I'm going to visit, or the first region we're going to visit together while zigzagging in our, you know, dream future season, because I've never been to Abruzzo. I drove through Abruzzo to go to Puglia, but I never stopped in Abruzzo. I always meant to go there, but it's the forgotten region. Abruzzo, Molise, and Basilicata, these three regions in southern Italy, are sort of the forgotten region. So we never talk about Abruzzo. I don't know why. I mean, it's a beautiful region. I'll talk about it and I'll tell you something. So while I was doing my research for this podcast and I, you know, saw some pictures online and I was like, wow, I knew it was beautiful, but not this kind of beautiful. It's really amazing. So, l'Abruzzo è bellissimo. It's one of the masculine regions in Italy, like Veneto, okay? So, l'Abruzzo, masculine. In English, it's often called Abruzzi with a final I in Italian, okay? So, Abruzzi. But it's sort of the plural. Mm-hmm. And there is a reason for that, an historical reason. It was divided in different areas, but now it's Abruzzo. Okay, geographically speaking, it's a central region. But historically and culturally, it's considered south, even though it is still center. It's not a very big region. It's like number 13 out of 20. And only 1.2 million people live there. So it's not huge. It's not a lot of people. And it borders Marche, Lazio, Molise, and of course the Adriatic Sea. So Marche, Lazio, Molise, now you can tell how this is in the center. But the Appennini, so the mountains, sort of end there. Mm-hmm. So it has very high mountains and then the coast. So it was isolated, we could say that. Kind of secluded. So that's why it was a little bit behind in the past. And then it suffered the same problems that the South did. And so it's considered a southern region. Now, it is one of the most mountainous regions in Italy. You would never think about a central or southern region as, I mean, you know, with high mountains, but that's it. And the Corno Grande, which is in the Gran Sasso area in Abruzzo, of course, we're talking about Apennini Mountains, is the highest summit, the highest peak in the Apennini Mountains with 2,914 meters, which is about 9,500 feet. So it's pretty high. And you can ski there, of course. And then there's the coastline. I mean, it's just so beautiful. And it has long sandy beaches in the northern half of Abruzzo and sort of pebble beaches in the southern half, but still it's beautiful. And the most famous coastline, coast part, is the Costa dei Trabocchi. And it's really unique and it has these clear waters and this Trabocchi. We will talk about those. But most importantly, Abruzzo is known as the green lung of Europe. It's green. It's green. There's a lot of forest. There are three national parks, one regional park, and a lot of natural reserves where you can do anything. So you have the best flora and fauna and animals and plants and everything. It's really amazing. If you like hiking or you like being just outside, outdoor, it's amazing. So basically, in Abruzzo, you can hike. Mm-hmm. In the forest, you can ski overlooking the sea, or you can swim and looking at the mountains up there. Maybe snow-capped mountains. Well, the water would be pretty cold, but if you like swimming in cold water, then you can do that. Anyway, you know what I mean, right? There's everything. Usually, when I do my bit on Italian regions, I always tell you the main cities of the regions and the most famous, you know, spots, little towns, villages, or whatever that is. Well, I can tell you the province of the region of Abruzzo that are L'Aquila, and that's the capital city of Abruzzo, Chieti, Pescara, and Teramo. And that's it. Because, I mean, I was doing some research, like, hey, what are the famous villages, the famous, you know, places in Abruzzo that people might have heard of? Couldn't find any. I mean, not a single village that was so famous. And they are beautiful. They are. But they're just not famous. So they're just names. And I, as an Italian, wasn't even sure how to pronounce them, you know, the accent. And I was like, okay, but if I have never heard of them, I'm sure none of the listeners haven't either. So let's just say, visit Abruzzo because it's beautiful and let me know what are your favorite places so that I can go there. So every single week I say, oh, this region has a very long history, but Abruzzo does, okay? There's evidence of people living there 600 thousand years ago. We're talking about a Paleolithic time, Paleolithic period, a long time ago. And then they were conquered by the Romans. Guess who? Always them, right? And that happened before the 3rd century before Christ. So a long time ago. Then the Roman Empire was there. And after the fall, after the decline of the Roman Empire, the region broke up, okay? There were many, many small feudal states. And during the Middle Ages, Abruzzo was under the control of Spoleto, so this other city in Umbria. And then in the 12th century, the Normans, so from this Germanic people, conquered the area, conquered the territory, and it became part of the Kingdom of Sicily. And then, of course, we have the Anjou, we have the Aragonese, we had the Spanish Habsburg, a lot of different domination in the area, as it always happened in Italy. Now you start to understand why we're all so different, right? And it's such a mess here to explain history. But anyway, in the 18th century, Abruzzo became part of the Kingdom of Naples. And it was, at that point, it was divided into Abruzzo Ulteriore 1, Abruzzo Ulteriore 2, Abruzzo Citra, and Molise. So it was divided in different sub-areas, we could say, and one of those sub-areas was Molise, and then we had 3 different Abruzzi. So that's why, even in Italian, the region was often referred to in the plural, Abruzzi. Basically, what happened back in 1860, with all the unification process here in Italy, the region became part of unified Italy. And in 1948, so after World War II, okay, we are talking about recent times here, Abruzzi was joined with Molise, the region in the south, to form the region of Abruzzo e Molise. So that was the full name of the region, Abruzzi or Abruzzo and Molise. And only in 1963, the two regions were separated again. So the two forgotten regions of Italy, Abruzzo and Molise. Now, basically, until a few decades ago, Abruzzo was, like a poor region in the Mezzogiorno area. That's how we call the south, right? But it has developed. It has developed so much in the past decades, or maybe 20 years. And it's now the first region of the South. It's gaining a very important role in the national economic system. So one more reason to visit Abruzzo and see what's that like. Now, a few fun facts about Abruzzo that I have for you. If you don't master Italian, and I really mean master, don't move to this town in Abruzzo, because it has the record, for the longest name. Like the town with the longest name in Italy. And that is San Valentino in Abruzzo Citeriore. That's the full name of the town.
Oh, wow.
But it's nice. I mean, it's San Valentino, Valentine's Day. I mean, Saint Valentine. And then in Abruzzo Citeriore, remember, it was one of the 3 parts of Abruzzo when it was divided, but still very long. And I was born in Abbiategrasso, quite a long name, near Milan. And I used to live until a few months ago in Castelnuovo Berardenga, which is also pretty long. There is not a single form, that I can fill with pen and paper still, but where I can fit my address. So I can only, imagine how people from San Valentino in Abruzzo Citeriore are just like, no, I'm not filling any form. I would just give up because there's no way it's going to fit. So when I was talking about the coastline and so on, I mentioned the Costa dei Trabucchi. Now, what is a trabucco? Well, it is, and it was, because it's ancient, of course, in origin, like a massive construction. It's wood, like a platform, and it's anchored on the rocks. And then there are 2 long, large logs and 2 long, we call them antennas, so like things that stretch out. And there is a huge net hanging from there. So basically, it's a fishing station, very ancient in origin, became a thing in the 18th century, and now it's part of the Abruzzo heritage, basically, and they are protected, and you can still see them. Some of them were turned into restaurants, maybe, or some of them are still there, sort of like a museum, but it's so interesting and so beautiful. So if you go to Costa dei Trabucchi, you will see a lot of Trabucchi, obviously. And if you like jewelry or stuff like that, Abruzzo is very famous for copper, iron, and even stone manufacts. So you have a lot of artisans there. And there's something really special and traditional. It's called a presentosa. Now, it's a traditional piece of jewelry, like a pendant that you wear, and it has one or two hearts in the middle, and it's all gold or copper or whatever, but it's so really intricate. It's like lace, you know, it's just so, so beautiful. And traditionally, it was worn by brides-to-be. And it was a gift by their future husband or the future in-laws. But they're now so, so beautiful, and you can get some. They're very traditional, and they're called La Presentosa. And finally, confetti. You have white for weddings, pink for when a baby is born or the first anniversary, first wedding anniversary. You have blue for when a baby is born and first communion. You have red for your graduation. Yeah, or the most famous confetti come from there. No, it's just almond. Yeah, the Sulmona ones is just almond covered in sugar. That's it. But you can also find versions with some chocolate too. And speaking of confetti, are you ready for the food and wine section? Saffron from L'Aquila, so very famous, grows there. We have carrots, we have olive oil, and we have vitellone bianco dell'Appennino centrale. So it's a cow, a big white cow, typical of that area of the Appennini, that is so good. The most famous wine is Montepulciano d'Abruzzo. Now, very important, there's a town in Tuscany called Montepulciano, but that's near in the provincia di Siena, where they make the Montepulciano wine, okay? Nobile di Montepulciano or Rosso di Montepulciano. This is Montepulciano d'Abruzzo. So you have to read the whole thing, okay? Two different regions, same name, and both amazing wines. Even Montepulciano d'Abruzzo is really good. And Colline Termane DOCG is another wine. And you have a few wines in Abruzzo. Yeah, no, not that bad, you know. A forgotten wines, like the forgotten region, but they're good. As for dishes, the most famous dish from Abruzzo, it's arrosticini. Arrosticini. Now, it's mutton skewers that are grilled, like barbecued. And then there's pizzonde, hope pronunciation is sort of right, which is fried pizza, basically, and cacio e ove, that is cheese and egg polpette. So basically meatballs with no meat, but cheese and eggs. That is also very good. And then spaghetti alla chitarra. Now, it's a special, a traditional way of making spaghetti. Now, the word chitarra means guitar, right? So I don't know if you ever seen this kitchen tool. It looks like a guitar. It has strings, and you take your pasta, your flat sheet of pasta, you put it on top, and then with a special movement, you cut the spaghetti. So they come, the spaghetti alla chitarra, typical from Abruzzo. And finally, there's the cicerchiata. It's another weird name. Basically, it's dough, like a sweet dough, then it's fried and then covered in honey and sprinkles. Very, very similar to struffoli from Naples. So even pizza fritta, so fried pizza, struffoli, and a few more things, see how similar they are, because they're not that far away, and Abruzzo was under Naples for a few centuries. So, and I try to find a singer or a famous song from Abruzzo, and I couldn't. This is my first defeat in my segment about Italian regions. I couldn't find anything. there is folk music, okay? Folk music from Abruzzo. If you want to like travel back in time, you can just type, you know, on YouTube or whatever, Abruzzo folk music, traditional music, whatever, and you will hear those sounds from the south. It's really interesting and quite, yeah, you know, very Italian. And, you know, even for movies, that was easier, of course. There was actually a movie very recent, like 13 years ago now, with George Clooney that was shot there. So you can find that one or a few more. But I wanted to talk to you about Fontamara. That is a movie, but it's from a novel, okay? A novel from Ignazio Silone, a famous Italian writer, of course. The plot revolves around the lives of the people living in Fontamara, peasants mostly. They are poor. They are deprived of everything, but they're very determined. So what you can do is either read the book, watch the movie, or both. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the masterpieces of Italian literature, and obviously the movie is from that book. So no song, but I gave you a movie and a book today.
Thank you, Vera. I really appreciate that. We've got some surrounding sounds. Since we didn't have a specific song for you today, we're going to actually be listening to some folklore music, some folk music from Abruzzo for our surrounding sounds. Before we get into that, though, I want to quickly thank our sponsors. ExpressVPN is a service that I've been using since I moved to Italy, and it is absolutely essential to have a VPN while you live in Italy. It helps you with your phone, helps you with security, helps you with your streaming services, and many other things. Helps you from being tracked by big tech companies. You can use public Wi-Fi while you're out and about and traveling, so it's very, very helpful to have ExpressVPN. They are the best. They offer 3 months for free to our listeners when they follow the links on our website, imovingtoitaly.com. If you're looking for a wonderful app to learn a language, specifically Italian, I recommend Babbel Language. Babbel Language is a sponsor of our show, and I've been using them since before they were a sponsor, and I have found that they are better than all the other language programs, including Rosetta Stone, Pemsler, and Duolingo. I've used them all. I personally find Babbel Language to be the best, and they offer more than 50% off to our listeners during the holiday seasons. Like right now, oftentimes they do deals where they do a lifetime membership for over 55% off, which I think the lifetime membership is the very best deal because you pay once and then you have access to all of their languages. So any other language besides Italian that you want to learn. So check out imovingtoitaly.com and you can sign up for Babbel Language through the links there and save money. Thank you to ExpressVPN and Babbel for being our sponsor today. Now, if you are looking for a serious, serious approach to learning Italian, obviously you're going to want to reach out to our wonderful Vera Sarzano with Chicche Language. Besides being a wonderful host of this podcast, Vera is a full-time translator and language teacher, and many of her students are listeners of this podcast. Vera also has a wonderful following on Instagram at ChicheGram on Instagram, so you should follow her there. You can visit her website at ChicheLanguage.com. That's C-H-I-C-C-H-E language.com. Vera has gotten very busy over the years, but she still has some room for some group classes, and I'm in one of her group classes. Many of our listeners are as well. You're going to want to check out Vera for all your Italian language learning needs. Also, I've had the privilege this year of helping a number of listeners with their problems and their issues moving to Italy. Now, there are lots of Facebook groups all over the place that talk about moving to Italy, and there are wonderful resources all over the place. But if you'd like some very specific questions answered by someone who has moved to Italy, made mistakes, learned the hard way, and knows how to live life in Italy, knows how to move here successfully, I would be thrilled to help you. So you can reach out again at imovingtoitaly.com, and I would be happy to help you. I have limited availability, but I usually keep it to the weekends. So Saturdays and Sundays, I have some availability starting, I think, now at the end of January. I've got some availability, so you can reach out, and I'd be happy to help you there. Okay, that brings us to our surrounding sounds. So we're going to be listening to some music from Abruzzo today, some folk music, some musica abruzzese. And this particular song that we're going to be listening to is called L'Umartiello. And I found this to be a very charming and very interesting song. You can sort of hear that they're speaking in an interesting accent and dialect of the region. So enjoy this song from Abruzzo, and Vera and I will be back afterwards to say goodbye.
Io sono martiello, assai curioso, da una cantina esco, da l'Alcatraso. Quando ritorno a casa, tutto ubriaco, dico mogliera mia, facci della pace. Lena, mia cara Lena, tu sei la pena di questo cuore, vorrei coprire la tua bocca di baci, di baci, di baci. Non voglio fare, sono adirata, se prima non mi dici dove hai stato. Io vado a lavorare, trasporto vino, lo bevo e lo trasporto qui dentro di me. Vino, vino, eccolo qua, vino, vino e tira a campare. Vino, vino, eccolo qua, vino, vino e tira a campare. Vorrei coprire la tua bocca di baci, di baci, di baci, per dirti quanto mi piaci e poterti sul cuore. Tu sei più bella della rosa di maggio, l'occhio che tiene in fronte sono come lumere. Tu vuole bene a te, ci vuole coraggio, io sparo perché muore d'amore per te. Lena, mia cara Lena, ti voglio bene, ti voglio a me, vorrei coprire la tua bocca di baci, di baci, di baci, per dirti quanto mi piaci e poi tenerti sul cuore. Vorrei coprire la tua bocca,
Lena,
di baci,
Lena,
di baci,
ti faccio una specie.
Coprir la tua bocca di baci, di baci, di baci, per dirti quanto mi piaci e poi tenerti sul cuore.
That song made me feel like getting up and dancing, Vera.
The forgotten song from the forgotten Abruzzo, but it's also beautiful.
Exactly. And I'm really glad we were able to dedicate an entire episode to this sort of unknown region and give it the respect that it deserves, because it really is a very, very beautiful region. Well, Vera, it's still technically a little early to be saying Buon Natale, isn't it, in Italy?
Well, it depends. You know, we never give a straight answer. It always depends on something. If you know you're not going to see that person soon, then you say Buone Feste, Buon Natale, and so on. I'm going to see you again very soon, like next week for our next episode. But you can say, since we already have our Christmas trees and our presepe out, because we do that on December 8th, you can say Buone Feste.
Okay, I feel like that's more traditional. That's more authentic Italian, Buone Feste. So I will say, Vera, to you and to all of you listening, Buone Feste. And Vera and I are very much looking forward to coming back and sharing all about a really, really great time we shared together in Tuscany in next week's episode.
Ci vediamo la settimana prossima. Ciao, ciao.
Wherever you're listening to the sound of our voices today, we hope you are healthy and well, and we look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode, the final episode of the year. So until then, take care. God bless. Ciao, ciao, ciao.